Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge, and this is show number 78, February 2nd, 2015. I am your host, Tom Riddell. Tonight, normally we have on our co-host, Robin Eduardo, but she's taking a break because apparently she's in the middle of a storm out there in New Jersey, so we wish her the best. Brief intro to today's show. We are having on, once again, P.S. Bartlett. This time she's written a book called The Blue Diamond, The Razor's Edge. And she'll be on about 15 minutes after the hour, wherever you are. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriddell.com/blog. And over there, you can listen to the show. And the Blog Talk Radio player is located in the upper left-hand corner of that page, as well as all of the interviews or all of the reviews that I've done of the books through the last couple of years. A Facebook link is located on the Blog Talk Radio site. Go on over there and click on it. Go over to the Facebook and like us on Facebook. You can contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors. Well, we don't have anybody on next week, but we're hoping to have them on starting in March. We put out the word for all you authors out there. We're looking for new authors here on the Writer's Lounge and new books, of course. So if you'd like to be on the show and have your book reviewed, please contact me at twl11@yahoo.com and make sure you enter in Blog Talk. Well, I'm sorry, you wouldn't want to enter in Blog Talk Radio. You want to enter in the review and book Blog Talk Radio show on your subject line, and that'll make sure that I'm aware that you're in here to send your book to us. Also, with a MOBI file, really works the best in that format. So go ahead and do that. Once again, it's twl11@yahoo.com, and most of the information you can find on the Facebook site. So go on over there, like I said, and like us, and you'll be able to read what you have to do. And okay, and let's see here. What else is here? And sponsoring our show, as always, Magic Pen Web Design offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And if you'd like to give us a call here on the show and talk to me and Peggy, you can do that at toll-free 877-878-1436 and 626-213-5613. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. We won't bite. So go ahead and do that. Now, since I don't have a co-host to gab with, we're going to play about a five-minute clip here on the book and the novel and the future of the book and the novel. And the persons you're going to be listening to is Paul Auster and Phil Roth. First, it's Paul talking about the future of the book and novel. I know that now that the e-books have pretty much been the norm around here for quite a while, everybody's wondering whether or not they're going to remain intact. So we'll listen to Paul talk about that, and then following that, we'll listen to Phil Roth on that subject too. So here you go. First off is Paul Auster and Phil Roth, and after this we'll come back, and I see Peggy is in there. P.S. Bartlett is in here, and we'll bring her on. See you in a little bit.
Philip has been talking like this for decades now, and the fact is he keeps writing books, and people keep reading them. And I disagree strenuously. Human beings need stories, and we're looking for them in all kinds of places, whether it's television, whether it's comic books or movies or radio plays, whatever form. People are hungry for stories. Children, I mean, think of your own childhood. How important the bedtime story was. How important these imaginary experiences were for you. They help shape reality. And I think human beings wouldn't be human without narrative fiction. Okay, perhaps the market. The way things are moving, fewer people are reading novels than previously. But still, if you walk into a bookstore, there are thousands upon thousands of them there. And they wouldn't be in print unless somebody was buying them. Libraries are crammed with novels as well. And people are reading them. And I don't think it's ever going to dry up because, two, the novel is such a flexible form. It's not like a sonnet. It's not fixed. You can do anything you want with it. It's just a story that you tell within the covers of a book. But all bets are off. There are no rules. And that's why I think the novel is constantly reinventing itself. And society continues to reinvent itself. Every historical moment needs the stories to be told about it. So, much as I admire Philip Roth, I just think he's wrong about this. Well, I know it's changing already, or at least there are new things that have been happening, but it even goes back 10, 20 years now. Hypertext, Bob Coover doing all these things with computers and multiple narrators of stories, multiple authors of stories, I should say. I don't know. I'm not a man deeply interested in technology. It eludes me. I confess I don't even have a computer. I don't have a cell phone. But I did read recently about a new digital magazine doing very short stories that people can read on their telephones. Maybe this is interesting. Maybe not. I think people are trying out ideas with the new technology, and it's too early to say where it's going exactly. But again, whether it's digital or paper, it doesn't matter. It's words that somebody is reading and getting an experience out of that reading. That's all that really matters.
I saw that in an interview that you don't think novels are going to be read 25 years from now. Were you being provocative, or do you believe that to be true?
I was being optimistic about 25 years, really. Mm. No, I think it's going to be cultic. I think there are always people who will be reading them, but there'll be a small group of people, maybe more people than now read Latin poetry, but somewhere in that range,
Is there anything you think that novelists can do about that, or is just that you think the narrative form is just going to die out? It's just the length of them, or what? Is that what's dictating you to writing shorter books now?
It's the print that's the problem. It's the book. It's the object itself. To read a novel requires a certain kind of concentration, focus, devotion to the reading. If you read a novel in more than 2 weeks, you don't read the novel, really. So I think that that kind of concentration and focus and attentiveness is hard to come by. It's hard to find huge numbers of people or large numbers of people or significant numbers of people who have those qualities.
Do you feel that the Kindle is not going to be that? I mean, when I'm on airplanes now, I now see people reading Kindles all the time.
I don't think the Kindle will make any difference to what I'm talking about, which is that the book can't compete with the screen. It couldn't compete beginning with the movie screen, it couldn't compete with the television screen, and it can't compete with the computer screen, I don't think. And now we have all those screens. So against all those screens, I think the book can measure up.
Okay, there you go. That's,
you said, I saw that in an interview, that you don't think novels are going to be read 25 years from now. Were you being provocative, or do you believe that to be true?
I was being optimistic about 25 years.
Okay, a little problem with the audio there. Anyways, let's get on with today's event, and it's The Blue Diamond, The Razor's Edge. It was written by P.S. Bartlett and published by Libertine Press in Ravenswood Publishing in 2014. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. My review of The Blue Diamond, Ivory Shepherd has made a name for herself as a notorious pirate, Ivory Razor, while she and her handy cousins, Cass, Kira, and Miranda, are building a life in Port Royal, Jamaica. And I'm sorry, that's Amazon. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm really lost without Robin here, and I really apologize. But my review of the book, a bottle of rum, a sword, a passion for the sea, and a devotion to do what pirates do, steal, brings two swashbuckling pirates together. One of them is a dangerous but charming male, and the other also a dangerous but charming female. The two strong but stubbornly determined characters set sail on their own separate journeys, but soon find that they are both prisoners to each other, literally and figuratively. Not only do they share a passion for the sea and sailing ships, but they soon find they share a passion for each other, but neither one of them knows for sure if there is an ulterior motive involved. P.S. Bartlett has once again served up a story that will capture the reader. Her ability to enchant us with her skills as a historical fiction writer is just simply amazing. As you read her books, you are magically transported back to another time, and I stepped away from her story wondering if her colorful and interesting characters really did exist. This author shines bright, and she is someone who obviously deserves the awards that she has already received in her other two books. If you're looking for a story that will take you away to another time and place and hold you there for many wonderful hours, this is the story. Grab your bottle of rum and settle in for a wonderful tale told. And with that, once again, my apologies for slipping up there, but we will bring on Peggy. Are you there?
I'm here, Tom. How are you?
Oh, I'm struggling here, Peggy. It's usually me and Robin going back and forth, and I'm stumbling over my words, and I had some technical problems, as I usually do here before the show, and my screen kind of went out on my computer, so I couldn't read what I was actually talking about here, so it was kind of difficult, but anyways, I got through that. But how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
That's good. And are you in the brunt of a storm there? You're on the East Coast, right?
Yes.
So what's the weather? What's the weather like?
Right now it's dry, but it's very windy. We had a little bit of snow mixed with rain and sleet last night, but now it's just really cold and very windy.
Yeah, it's still winter hanging on, huh?
Oh, it sure is. It will be for a bit.
No relief from the groundhog, I heard, too, today.
I know. There never seems to be.
No, he always seems to see a shadow, and then that indicates 6 more weeks of winter. But when I look at my calendar, the calendar is 6 more weeks of winter. So I guess, you know, if spring comes when it's supposed to, then I'm happy.
Yes, especially where you are.
Absolutely. And, okay, here we are again, once again on the Writer's Lounge. This is your third book, and here you are. You're a veteran of the Writer's Lounge, but can we get you to read an excerpt from The Blue Diamond, The Razor's Edge?
All right. I mean, this always makes me really nervous, but I'm going to do it.
Okay.
All right. I'm just going to start at the beginning, and here we go. Coming through it. Chapter 1. Ivory once said, "Bring me a lad with the right stuff, and I'll leave him even better." But that was long before she was found adrift and alone in a leaky longboat, rocking her way with the tide to the soft white Jamaican shore. Her skin was the color of an angry sunset behind the white clouds of hair tossed about her face and shoulders. Too vacant and weak to move, she lay curled up in the bow of the vessel, clutching her razor in one hand and an empty rum bottle in the other. Adrift in delirium, her battered hands reached forward, pressing against two golden gates, pushing them open with ease until she heard several faint, panicked voices. They grew louder and stronger until she blinked and the gates before her vanished. Up she floated into the air until all she saw through her lidded eyes was the white sky growing closer and two strong black arms lifting her from an early grave. "Be still or be dead," said the voice belonging to those arms, as he pulled the razor from her flaccid grip, folded it, and slipped it into his sash. Another voice spoke above her. "Is it she? She has ears on her head, unless you have gone blind. Now shut up. Check that boat for anything she may have carried with her." The next time her eyes opened, she was again in a longboat, but this time she was not alone. She felt the boat list as two men jumped out into the surf and pulled it ashore. A moment later, Ivory's limp body was draped across the sweaty, broad shoulders of one of the largest men she'd ever come upon. She cracked her eyes enough to see the world around her rise and fall with each step that's in the sand the giant took. She could barely remember her own name, yet let alone how long she'd been adrift before the tide so generously dumped her into the waiting arms of the next chapter of her life. She did, however, find something oddly familiar about the giant. Trying to think exhausted her. In hopes of remembering, she closed her eyes. The next thing she knew, she was lying on a soft down bed, naked, clean, and covered with a red satin sheet. That was many hours later. "Good, you're awake." She turned her head in the direction of the voice, but had no recollection of the person from whom it came. She blinked several times, her body barely able to twitch in surprise at the sight of the far too pretty, well-dressed man seated in the chair to her left. Through her blurred vision, his thick, dark, curly hair, bronze complexion, and impeccably wrapped white satin neck scarf were clear enough. However, she was dying of thirst, and at this moment cared not as to who brought her the water, but only that there was water. "Water," she whispered. "Of course," the man replied as he leapt to his feet and poured her a glass from a fine crystal pitcher. "Allow me," he said, lifting her head from the pillow as he guided the goblet to the slit between her scaled lips. Once a single sip of water reached her tongue, she reached out, took the goblet, and poured the water into her mouth. "Slow down now, love. Easy does it." Ivory pulled the empty goblet away from her lips and slid her tongue out from between them. She swiped it from one corner of her mouth to the other before she pushed the goblet back into the man's hand. "More." "Why, of course. You may have the sea in its entirety, if that is what it will take to quench your thirst, love." "If the sea could have quenched my thirst, I wouldn't be here now, would I?" she said in a rasp. "Oh, you take me quite literally. I was simply making a..." "Do not play at words with me, sir. Who are you and where am I?" Ivory sat up on her elbow, holding out the goblet, as the red satin sheet slid down over her chest, catching itself on her blistered skin. She was grateful to be alive, yet as the water flowed into her blood and restarted her shriveling organs, her mind returned to life as well. Every brain cell reignited with the powerful instinct of suspicion as the man leaned over the goblet to refill it, and she pulled it back. "Do you think I'd poison you? I'd do no such thing," he remarked with an exaggerated frown that appeared insincere yet appalled at the same time. "If I wanted you dead, I certainly wouldn't have had you brought here," he said, pouring himself a glass. "Don't flatter yourself. I'm deciding if I want to live or die. I believe that God has made that decision for you already." "Well, I believe he may have made a mistake." "Why would you say such a thing?" he asked, pulling her hand forward and filling the goblet without breaking her gaze. She did manage, however, to admire the large and rather unique rings he wore on nearly every finger. "Sit down. I don't like you hovering over me." "Of course, madame. Now, back to God and his mistaken act of sending my men to find you and your boat on the beach," he said with a bow, sweeping his right arm across his body, yet still barely blinking and strangely unable to relinquish eye contact. Ivory stared at the full goblet and tried to decide whether or not to continue replenishing her body or to lie down and die. She imagined she wasn't far from death anyway when the memory of the gates before her appeared in her thoughts. "Found me on the beach." A moment later, the goblet flew from her hand when she was startled by the hard pounce of a huge, fluffy black cat with bright emerald eyes that leaped seemingly from some other dimension onto her chest. The Maine Coon weighed no less than 20 pounds and almost knocked the wind from Ivory's lungs. "Lasher, where are your manners?" her host chided the cat, standing to retrieve his darling pet. The cat let out a deep meow, which lasted until his master sat back in his chair and settled the animal as it curled into his lap. "Pardon my boy, love. He was only saying hello. Just a moment, and I'll have that cleaned up for you." "Roman?" "Yes, sir," said the young Jamaican man who stood just outside the doorway. He wore a powdered wig and a black waistcoat and tails complete with white gloves. "Bring the young lady some dry sheets. It seems Lasher's adoration of the element of surprise has caused Madame to spill her water." "That won't be necessary," Ivory stated firmly. "Why? You're soaked. And it feels wonderful. It's hotter than the fires of hell. You've been extremely kind, and I'd love to stay and chat, but I really should be going," Ivory said as she attempted to sit up and rise from the bed. She reached down and pulled the wet sheet around herself, pinching it at her side, but fell slowly back onto the bed. "My dear, you're not the least bit ready to go anywhere. Roman, get the sheets." Roman bowed and hurried off, while the man lifted the goblet from the bed, refilled it, and placed it easily back in Ivory's hand. "Is he always so formally dressed?" "I like to maintain a certain level of decorum and dignity. Roman doesn't seem to mind now, does he?" "Drink. You'll not die today under my watch, unless I say so." "Surely you jest. Neither you nor any other man have power over my life. Even God himself did not kill me. You said so yourself. He spared my life today." "God and the sea pushed you to safety, but it was I who saved your life." "Saving my life does not give you ownership of it, sir. Do not allow my weakened state to deceive you of what I have done and can do when called upon to stay alive."
Well, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, gosh, you could just keep reading and reading and reading. And I'd sit here and just be as I am normally when I'm reading your books. Just in awe of your characterization and your descriptions and everything that you managed to pull all that together and show us the characters and also show us the place. And that's just great. It's just great you can do that. What I'd like to ask you, Peggy, is Ivory is a very strong-willed woman. And I was just wondering, how did Ivory Shepherd come to be, and did the story come to you first, or did she?
It's a very interesting thing. I guess it's been about almost a year and a half ago now. I was finished writing Hope from the Ocean, and it was with the editor at the time, and I've always loved pirate stories, and you know me, I'm obsessed with historical fiction. I love watching it, reading about it, whatever, but I've always loved pirate stories. And I had gone to the, had planned on writing a pirate story. I just wasn't sure when I was going to do it because I knew I had so much more to learn and so much research to do. And so here I had time on my hands, but I went to an Irish festival. We have a big Irish festival here in Baltimore every year in October. And pardon me, I'm just getting over a cold. And I found these great books. There was a stand there. It was one of the vendors, and they had some really cool stuff, and they had these great pirate books. So I picked up those two books, and I know within 2 days I read them both front to back about all the, you know, the notorious pirates and whatnot. And so shortly after that, I started talking about it, you know, with a couple of close friends, and actually was on Facebook, and I said, I want to write this pirate story, and I was more or less reaching out to my friends, and I said, I need a name for this character, and I need a name for this character, and I had always known it was going to be Ivory. I don't know where that came from, but I, a while back, I do recall in interacting with a sales rep, believe it or not, for a company, and her name was Ivory. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that name. And I said, oh, that's perfect. So then it just evolved from there. I mean, I think that thread with all my friends, you know, joining in, and we say, oh, let's name this character this and that character that. And then one of my coworkers, Brian, he and I started messaging back and forth about meanings of names and you know, in order to get to Maddox. Because I always, for some reason, with names, I always use the characterization of or the meaning of the name as part of the character's persona.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps with, you know, keeping true to that character's persona. You know, when you first start writing them, you're just getting to know them. If you have that in your mind that this is what that name means, it really helps that character to evolve as that meaning of that name, as that type of person.
Yes.
But that's where it all started, pretty much. It was just banging ideas around with, you know, with some friends. And then from there, I sat down and outlined the story, and that was that. It just went from there.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, we just briefly mentioned your other two books. I read those two books, and again, they were fantastic, just as this one was. And I was just wondering, how long did it take you to write Blue Diamond? Or was it hard? I know it is for a lot of writers to leave the other story behind. Did you have any problems doing that?
I actually haven't left the other story behind. I've already started the third book in that series. Yeah, I've already started it. And what I'm basically doing with some following books in the Firefly series, I'm going to do some novellas on, you know, the kids and you know, as far as, you know, what goes on in their lives once Fireflies is over. So that, don't despair, because they'll be back. I've already, like I said, I've already started that book, the first book, which is going to be about Tegan. And I actually just last night finished the second book in the Blue Diamond series, but the Blue Diamond is a very big book. It just went on and on and on, and I didn't know if I was ever going to finish writing it. And I said, you know, I'm going to have to stop this somewhere. But I'm going to say all total about 3 months, because there was a lot of research involved.
Okay.
And so I want to say, including research, between 3 and 4 months.
Well, does that mean you're sitting down every day and writing a certain
Pretty
amount
much.
Of hours, or what's your discipline as far as writing?
My discipline is, I normally write every day, every single day, every single night. I work full time during the day. I watch my granddaughters. I have one granddaughter is almost five, and she has two little baby twin sisters that are now, I think, 16 months old. And so I watch them on Thursdays and Friday evenings, and I keep the oldest one on Tuesday evenings. That's our special time. But they normally are home by 9 o'clock. So from the time they leave until usually midnight or 1 a.m., I'm writing.
Wow. Does it matter that you might be tired out from your day? I mean, especially being with kids, You would think around that time you'd want to be dozing off, and I'm just thinking about the writer's mind here, because I know that I've tried to write when I'm tired, and it just doesn't work.
I can't write when I'm tired. Actually, I wanted to finish the new book the other night, and I always call it, instead of eye strain, I say I sprain my eyes, because I'm an office manager, and naturally I'm working at a computer probably 90% of my day. So
yes.
Staring at a computer screen all day long, and I guess because I've been so focused on finishing the new book, Demons and Pearls, that I just really wore my eyes out very badly. And there were two nights in a row where I could literally almost not write.
Wow.
I sat down to try to write, and the screen would just blur and blur and blur. And it really upset me. So what I did was, since I couldn't read and I couldn't focus, I put my earbuds in, and I read one of my friend's books, who's a fabulous author. I love her, Christy Tyrone. It sounds like Tyrone, but it's T-A-I-J-E-R-O-N. She writes these fabulous pirate stories called the Endless Horizon series. And so I've been reading her series in between writing mine. And so since I couldn't write, I put my earbuds in and I listened to one of her books. And
I wonder how many pirates series are out there. Did you ever research and see what everybody else is writing? I know one person that comes to mind is Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Treasure Island.
I haven't read that in 30 years. So I recently started reading that again, because now it kind of takes on a whole new meaning for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do that myself.
And now that I've had this new nifty tool that Christy told me about, which is text-to-speech, some Kindles have it, some don't. But I actually just did a feature on Lit World Interviews. This is my friend Ronovan Hester's blog. I'm a contributor to that blog. And I did a feature on text-to-speech using it as an editing tool. And
oh.
I'm telling you, it has made a tremendous difference in my work. And
wow.
Like I said, I have to give all the credit to Christy. She recommended it to me, and I've been doing it now for several weeks. And I did a video on my YouTube channel showing you how to use text-to-speech on your iPhone or your iPad. And basically what you can do is send your manuscript to your Kindle app, and I use my earbuds because I have to block out everything around me when I'm editing, so I completely focus. And while I'm sitting there looking at my manuscript on my computer screen, it's like I read along with what I'm listening to on the text-to-speech while the book is being read to me, and I can hear missing words, extra words, run-on sentences,
wow.
All these things that you can't, that your eyes can't see, but you can hear it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And it has it's just amazing. It's just totally transformed all of my writing and my editing, because
yes.
I know what it's going to sound like. So anyway,
wow.
I'm rambling.
We should do a segment on it at some point. I think most of our writer friends that are out there listening would probably enjoy that. But anyways, everybody, we're talking to P.S. Bartlett. And if you'd like to call and talk to Peggy, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. I know we do have listeners here. I can see them on the board, but they're probably shy. So anyway, Peggy, what I'd like to ask you, getting back to you said you did the research, can you tell us more about that? Where did you go to find research on pirates? I know you just mentioned reading books, but did you do any other type of research?
Researching pirates is great fun because there is a wealth of information on the internet. Some is more folklore, some is more factual. And looking through that is, I mean, it's pretty endless, the information that you can find as far as the type of clothing they wore, the more popular locations, the history of the locations. Like, for instance, you know, the Blue Diamond takes place in 1717, but the story itself will start in 1707, which is the book I just finished. And the history of the islands of the Caribbean, for instance,
yes.
I found the most incredible maps, and through researching the maps and the history of those locations, the you know, the things that, or what each island, as far as what went on those islands with the pirates, especially in Port Royal and in Nassau, even as far as, you know, different pirates, how they died, what kind of weapons they used, I mean, right from, you know, the different types of ships that they, you know, that they sailed on. I mean, there's so much involved. How fast each ship went. I mean, that's how detailed it got, to where, you know, the things that I needed to know. And even writing this book and working, you know, and working so much with Christy, because she's, you know, she's a wealth of knowledge. It's so good to know so many different authors, but when you know authors who write in the same genre and even the same subject that you do, that is just, it's priceless to be able to have someone that you can discuss these things with. And, you know, we just have a blast talking to each other on the phone about different, you know, different storylines that we're working on. And as far as the history, I always know I can turn to her and I can say, did pirates in 1717, did they wear this type of belt, or did they, you know, wear this type of hat? You know, what is this baldric thing, and what do they use that for? And I mean, there's so many things. It's the amount of information from just talking to people, and, you know, using the internet research, maps, island histories, ship histories. There's so much that I have learned, and so much that I still want to learn.
Have you ever been to the Caribbean?
I have several times. I love it there. I've actually been to Jamaica. I've been to Grand Cayman. I've been to Cozumel. I've been in the Eastern and the Western Caribbean.
You talk about research, and I imagine, and I think the one term that comes to my mind when I think of pirates is walking the plank. Are you familiar with that term? And I don't want to give away any part of your story, but I'm wondering, did you ever use that in any part of your books, or think about using that?
Well, I didn't, and the reason for that is that is a myth. There is no such thing as walking a plank. I mean, the only planks they walked were, you know, when they were boarding another ship, and they used those planks to cross from one ship to the other. That's where there was never any, you know, walking the plank. I mean, it was stories and myths that were told where they couldn't be convicted of murdering a captive person if the person walked the plank and walked off the end into the water themselves.
Uh-huh.
See what I'm saying? But, as far as all the research I've done, that never really happened.
Wow. That's interesting. That's pretty cool. Anyways, you know, sitting down and starting to write your book, imagine you've got all these things going through your mind. You've got all the research that you did, all the facts, and then you get to the characters. You've already developed your characters. And then you have to have a conversation between those characters and the dialogue and writing the dialogue for your characters. How does it work out in your mind? Do you force them to say what you want them to say to fit the story, or do they control the conversation?
That's a good question. I would have to say it's a little bit of both. You have to allow the character to, I mean, I used to always complain about Tegan because Tegan never shut up. she would constantly, she could go on for chapters if I let her, because she had so much to say. Whereas in this story, there are a couple characters who do, Maddox likes to hear himself talk. Ivory, not so much. She's kind of a woman of action more so than words. But I think when they're, in the middle of a certain dialogue, I do tend to force things sometimes. But most of the time, if I just let them, in my imagination, let them naturally carry out a conversation, sometimes I end up cutting some of it. But I think you have to let that happen, because once that those characters become, like you said, you feel like they're real, then you almost know what they're going to say, and you almost know how they're going to react to any, to another person in a conversation. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's
if I need them to get to the point, I'll force them.
Yeah, that's kind of difficult sometimes when you're dealing with more than two characters and you're dealing with three and four.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you say is the most interesting, intriguing character in your book, and why?
I'm going to say Ivory in The Blue Diamond, because she's going through a very big evolution in her life, and that's why I call myself the backwards writer, but that's why this next book, Demons and Pearls, is going to start when they first arrive, when they first are on that very first pirate ship, the Demon Sea, and what happens after that pirate ship, after she arrives in Port Royal. And the reason for that is because in that time, women were not, let's just say they were treated as less than human beings. They went from, they were good for as wives and mothers, and that was about it. They really had no real value, and they had no power at all. It was definitely a man's world, and they just lived in it. And I need to show how, through that evolution, a woman could gain that much power to become a captain of her own pirate, her own ship. And that's not going to be, that wasn't an easy task, because most women in that time who did, there were only a handful of women who did reach that level of power, and most of those women, I'm sure, had to go through an evolution in order to reach that level. And that's why I find her so incredibly interesting, is because she's throughout the book I just wrote, and besides the flashbacks in The Blue Diamond of their life before 1717, she went through a tremendous amount of changes and pain and things that happened to her in her life in order to protect, her family. That's to me makes her interesting, that she has evolved to the point where, she's 50-50. She's half masculine, half feminine. And, in order to be able to live in the world that she was living in, that masculine side always had to be front and center, and the feminine side had to be always put on the back burner. You know what I'm saying? So that to me is very interesting. Her whole identity was, she was like split down the middle.
Well, were there any female pirates? I wonder about that.
There were several. I mean, two of the most famous, of course, were Anne Bonny and Mary Read. And, there you can find tons of information about them. Actually, if you watch Black Sails, one of the characters on the show is Anne Bonny. It doesn't necessarily follow, that show doesn't necessarily follow the actual storyline of her life. You know, she was a young, wealthy girl who ran away, who didn't want any parts of that, and she ended up finding herself mixed with pirates and became involved with another, with a pirate named Jack Rackham, who more or less, there's never really any, we don't know the real facts of everything.
Sure.
But anyway, she also got in cahoots with Mary Read, and they were quite a force to be reckoned with as women in those days. But they dressed as men. They didn't dress as women. They disguised themselves as men because, I mean, there was no way really for a woman to get aboard a pirate ship unless she looked, you know, unless she was dressed like a man. Women were considered bad luck. You didn't bring a woman on a ship. And it was even in a lot of the ship articles, the pirate rule book, that each pirate ship had set forth by the crew or the captain that in almost every set of articles that you'll find, it states on there, no woman or boy shall be brought aboard this ship for the purpose of, you know what. So it was just not done. So in order for a woman to be able to be, to take on that role as an actual pirate, they more or less, most of them had to conceal their identities.
Yeah. And Anne Bonny, I believe there was a statue of her when I was down in the Caribbean in 2005. I remember seeing something about her. And I think she obviously wore, a bandana around her head, covering, or whatever you want to call that. I'm not sure if it's called a bandana. But
yeah.
I found that interesting, too. But I didn't know of any others besides her. And that's why I asked the question. But the next question that I got for you is, if your book ever made it to the big screen, as in a movie, who would you pick to play the pirates?
That's so difficult because I knew on the cover of the book and the Ivory, she's a very attractive female, but in my mind, she's more of a Meryl Streep than she is, say, she's more of a Meryl Streep than she is, let's just see, who's a very beautiful actress right now, Jennifer Lawrence, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Although, you know, everybody says to me, oh, Jennifer Lawrence would make the perfect Ivory. She'd make, and I honestly think she would, but Ivory was, you know, she wasn't a girly girl. She wasn't, you know, she never considered herself pretty in any way. She felt she was, out of the four cousins, that she was plain. She thought Miranda is bubbly and gorgeous, and Cass is more elegant and has more of a delicate kind of beauty about her. And Kiera she's this cute little kind of like pixie-looking little bubbly girl. And she said, and I'm not. I'm just plain old me. That's how she sees herself. And so I don't know who I could choose for her. Now, Maddox has always, Henry Cavill's always been my number one idea for Maddox. I'm trying to think who else. I don't know. I did sit down one time and kind of try to figure this out as a promotional thing.
Johnny Depp, maybe?
No.
Kind of a pretty.
No, I don't see him at all.
Kind of a pretty guy, as they've talked about in you talk about in your book.
But I'm leaning more toward Cavill for Maddox. He's just got that, you know. I'm looking at Cavill in, let's just say, in the Tudors, for instance. You know, the way he looked in the Tudors more so than in Superman. But he's got that kind of, you know, suave, debonair kind of look about him. And, but that's, you know, so I would say if I had to pick someone, yeah, I would say Jennifer Lawrence probably, but they'd have to dull her down a little bit. She couldn't be as pretty as she is.
Yeah, yeah.
But as acting-wise, I think she would have the chops to play a woman pirate, absolutely.
Yeah, you need somebody with tenacity and that rough look. Beautiful at the same time, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. This is your third book, and we talked a little bit about your other two that's been published. I know you've written other. But what lessons have you learned from writing, and do you consider yourself a better writer now, Peggy?
Oh, yeah, a lot better. What lessons I've learned? I don't know. I guess that you have to do this for the right reasons. You have to do it because you love telling stories. Definitely not because you want to make money, because
right.
I still see it. I still have it in my spyglass, down the road a ways, where that I would be, but only in the capacity that I would be able to write full time, and not have to, let's just say, survive on 5 hours sleep a night, and
yeah.
And then go until I practically collapse. But mostly just being disciplined. I think that's a good lesson I've learned, is just uh-huh. being disciplined. But the thing about writing for me is that it doesn't feel like work. So I don't feel like
right.
I'm disciplining myself. I feel like I'm having fun, and I enjoy it.
Exactly.
So it's not even like
that.
Work.
When money comes into the equation, it becomes work, because
right.
that's your goal and that's your purpose, is to make money. But if your purpose is to enjoy and have fun, that's
mm-hmm.
where you need to go. Money,
yes, absolutely.
Secondary, but if
mm-hmm.
you're writing and you're destitute, well, if you don't have another job, it helps to have another job. Because if
mm-hmm.
you don't have another job and you think you're going to make money and you're spending all your time writing, you're probably going to get more poor, I would say, because you're not out there looking for work. But anyway, what's the hardest part of being a writer?
For me, it's just, I guess, having to, not being able to write all the time. Not being able to, I often think to myself, I think I write, pretty quick. And I think if I didn't have a full-time job, would I still write this fast? And how many stories could I tell in 1 year? That's, I'd say the hardest time would be not having enough time to write as much as I wish I could.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I immediately writing the book I just finished last night, I've already started the second book for that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus I have the Tegan book that I want to finish. And I have another book that I wrote during NaNoWriMo that I want to finish. So it's very frustrating. That's the hardest part. It's the frustration of not being able to tell the stories that you want to tell and get them out as quickly as you wish you could get them out. But that's the hardest part. Everything else,
right.
I love editing. I love everything to do with the creation of the story and the creation of the book and whatever it takes to make it the best that it can possibly be.
Yeah.
And so none of that is work to me. That's not work to me at all. That is just that's all part of the process.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like sent out the book last night to my beta readers, and I'm sitting here like, oh, I can't wait to see what they think, and I'm really nervous, and are they gonna love it, are they gonna hate it,
yeah.
And that's all fun. That's all fun. And I think that's, the thing with when I feel bad for writers who really suffer a lot as far as worrying and angst and whatnot. Just tell your story and trust yourself and
yes.
feel, and know that as long as you're giving it everything you've got and you're putting your heart and soul into that book, that even if it never sells a million copies, that's a part of you. That's a piece of you. I always think that 50 years from now, when I'm dead, that my grandchildren, are going to say, are going to know me through reading my stories. And that means more to me than money.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really nice. What else keeps you busy besides writing? Besides your grandkids?
Well, I think we already talked about that.
Yeah, it's your grandkids, right?
grandkids. Yeah. I have a home, a husband. I have a 19-year-old son. I have a wonderful, beautiful family. I'm never bored, Tom. I'm never bored.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even know what the meaning of the word bored is.
Yeah, that's the way I think of life too. Is I'm always busy, always doing something these days. So it's good to keep busy. Well,
I was going to say, but doesn't it make you feel better?
Absolutely. We're coming to the end of the show here. We only got a little over 4 minutes left, Peggy. And once again, can you tell us a little bit about the next Blue Diamond series book, the name and a little bit about it again?
Oh, this is so exciting. I love this book. This book is called Demons and Pearls, and it is about when Ivory and the girls first arrive in Port Royal, and they uncover a plot which is what mainly gets Ivory started in the piracy business.
And it's
the beginning of everything for them as far as how the story unfolds. And a lot of the things that are in the Blue Diamond, you will see why these things came about throughout the next. I'm hoping that this series is going to be, I see at least two more books before we reach the Blue Diamond, and then we can go beyond that. But I just want to tell the story. But there's another pirate who, because in those days, if you were a woman, you needed some strong male muscle in order to get you where you needed to be. It's just how it was. And she meets the strongest, most amazing male muscle that you can imagine. And he is he's an independent pirate. And he no longer is involved in that. But he's involved in another business that Ivory wants to get involved in. So from there, a whole lot of crazy mayhem. And this story is a bit darker, and it's a bit deeper into the business, let's just say, of what gets them started and gets their lives settled into the pirate life. So,
good.
I just love it.
Kind of doing the prequel. I really like how you do that. Give us a taste, and then you take us back, and then you take us forward. So that's pretty neat. I like the way you do that, and I'll be looking forward to that for sure. And all your books, as you know, and if nobody out there doesn't know, Peggy has won several awards, including on the Writer's Lounge. She's one of the top 5 picks of all of the 70 reviews that I've done over the last several years. So I want to congratulate you again on that accomplishment and all your other awards. You are a tremendous writer. We love having you on the show. You're a wealth of knowledge to the writers that are out there, or to the wannabe writers that are out there who want to become an author. So I thank you again. And before you leave us, Peggy, can you tell us again where we can find you on the internet?
You can definitely find me on Facebook, P.S. Bartlett. You can find me on Twitter, P.S. Bartlett. And my blog and my website is psbartlett.me on WordPress. And probably that's the place to go if you want to find out anything about the books, about anything to do with writing. And please feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or anything. I do my best to try to answer everybody who messages me or emails me. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm
a little bit of
everywhere, but mainly Facebook and Twitter and on my blog.
Thank you very much, Peggy, and we'll see you again on the Writer's Lounge,
thank you,
I'm sure. Yep, bye-bye.
I just love talking to you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And there we go. There goes Peggy, and there goes the Writer's Lounge for another installment here on show 78. We'll be back again at show 79 in March. So until then, keep writing and don't give up. Keep going. We'll be listening and talking to you again.
Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part.